Today, we are going to continue in this new series we started called Can You See Him? And today I want to deal with the hard fact, it's kind of hard sometimes, to recognize that God will work through people we didn't expect him to work through in places we didn't expect him to be, all so that others can encounter Jesus, maybe for the first time and maybe in a whole new way. Before we jump into John chapter 4, to what may be a familiar text for many of you, I want to ask, and you can be brave and raise your hand, or you can just keep it to yourself, but have you ever been the outcast? Have you ever been the unpopular person, the one everybody whispered about? You know, when that's you, you feel it even before you hear it. You know it before you walk into the room. Maybe y'all have never been there. I was that kid in high school. I was that kid in junior high school. And I've been that person in my adult life at times. Now, for those of you visiting, I want to tell you, we're pretty bold here at Bridge Church. We are a multi-generational, multi-ethnic culture here, and that means that for us to make that work, we keep it real. And I can't think of a better place to keep it real than this whole thing, right? Like, can I ask my darker skinned friends in the room, have you ever been driving south on 95? I mean, way south, like Georgia, maybe South Carolina, Georgia, and you realize a little too late in all the major cities have passed by that you need gas, and you're just not sure about the little town where you gotta stop. Keeping it real in the room? Do you have your mindset? And the hope is it's not like that anymore. The hope is it's gotten better. You wanna believe that, but are your hackles not up? Are you not aware and sensitive before you ever get out of the car? That maybe you're that person in the wrong place? No, nobody's gonna, okay. Let me flip that, let's not discriminate. Let me flip it. 10 years ago, Pastor Rick and I were at Healing Place Church. Great congregation, loved them, had a family we were super close to. Her dad died, we were invited. Of course, we were gonna come to the funeral to support her. So I walked in. Church was about 225 people, little church out in Nanjimoy. I walked in, 225 people, three Caucasian people in the room. I was her visiting pastor, which meant that at this Pentecostal church, they put me up on the platform. Can I tell you, I felt like 225 people were looking at me like the sins of all my forefathers were branded on my chest. I'm pretty sure I felt like I was the little white slave girl owner from down the street. That's how they were viewing me. At least that's how it felt in my mind. And if that's all a little too harsh and a little too real, then let's take it somewhere more comfortable. As a female enlisted person in the Middle East in Egypt, working with 17 different Middle Eastern nations, can I tell you that when I was there, I knew what they thought about me? Anybody else ever been there? Funny, but not funny. That's right, Charles. And even harder to go into that with an open mind. But when we don't go into those situations with an open mind, then we set ourselves up to miss Jesus in the midst of hard places. You know, I was talking to Tia this week. Many of you know her. They are church family of ours that live in Harrisburg. They come down quite often to be in person in the room with us. But for those of you who don't know, Tia works in public health. She doesn't just work in public health in Harrisburg. She is a rock star, you guys, and God keeps placing her in front of rulers and authorities and leaders in ways that just blow my mind. And so just this last week, she had two different encounters. Now, one was really cool and really fun. She got to sit down in a video conference with some of the authors and writers and directors for a new medical show called Pitt. Have you guys seen it? Y'all, I know I'm showing my age here, but she got to meet Noah Wiley virtually. Like, How awesome. He talked to her. He had questions for her, like from ER to Pitt, man. He's my guy. Anyway, she got to talk to him. But also in the last week, she got invited to Capitol Hill, which she does regularly. She regularly speaks on national levels, at national platforms. But she got invited to have a meeting with a very prominent Republican senator. Now, we are from all parties in this room. We don't discriminate. But I want to remind you, she works in public health. So her mindset going in to sit down for a one-on-one with a prominent Republican senator could be a little like, oh, they're against me. How's this going to go? Now, fortunately for Tia, she was prayed up and ready for that. And what she encountered when she walked in the door was someone who said, yes, I'm a Republican, and yes, I really do care about people. So let's sit down and see what we can do together. She'd been telling her coworkers about it all week long. But see, if she went in with her hackles up, if she went in a place of pride and prejudice, which is where we often are, then she might have missed some of that. Likewise, he might have missed some of all she had to offer if he had had the same attitude. Church, I'm going to say again that Jesus works through all people. Jesus shows up in all spaces and places. And he invites us to encounter him in all those ways. And I know it can be hard, but he will help us. So are you ready to learn how we can see him despite our pride and prejudice? Yes. Amen. We got a couple people in the room. All right. I know I said some hard stuff. But before you think I pulled too far out of context, let's all take a deep breath and invite the spirits to guide us through a passage that's going to talk about the reality of these things. So we're in John chapter 4, and I want to read to you verses 1 through 8. It says, now Jesus had learned that the Pharisees had heard that he was gaining and baptizing more disciples than John, although in fact it was not Jesus who baptized them, but his disciples. So he left Judea and went back more to Galilee. Now he had to go through Samaria, so he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, near the plot of ground Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, he sat down by the well, and it was about noon. When a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, "Will you give me a drink?" His disciples had gone to the town to buy food. So we want to have context. Here we are. We're early in Jesus' ministry. Jesus had turned water into wine just recently. Jesus had just called his disciples. Jesus was just getting started. And to avoid the popularity of the crowds and the attention of the Pharisees, he decided he was going to go back to Galilee from Judea. And it's interesting that in verse 4, it says he had to go through Samaria. Some versions say he needed to go. Now, I want to get this straight. Jesus was before this, in this moment, and still is God himself. Jesus didn't have to do anything, at least not by human standards. But it seems that Jesus had a divine appointment. But I want to get this straight. As a Jewish man, not only would Jesus not have to go through Samaria, he would have to go around Samaria because Samaria was a no-go zone for Jews. You see, Samaritans lived in the part of Israel that had been occupied by the Assyrians. They had intermarried. They had begun to practice different faiths. They had even, in years past, committed atrocities, sacrificing their children on the altar to false gods. And that had been a long time ago, but boy, did the Jews hold that against them. They were the other people. Jews hated Samaritans. Do you know there was actually a law written into Jewish law that if a Samaritan's shadow crossed over a Jew, the Jew was considered unclean and had to be ceremonially purified before they could go back into the temple courts? You want to talk about hatred and loathing. Now, Samaritan women, even worse. They had a whole extra set of laws. I won't go into them, but they were just continually unclean, considered the worst of the worst, the least of the least, the most undesirable. So I want you to picture Jesus having to go through Samaria, to walking into this town and sitting down by a well. Now, I want us to, again, get the moment. So let's talk about the well. Because as much as the men of a town would gather at the city gates to discuss business and politics and the things that were happening, the women gathered at the well. The well was the center of life. The town watering hole wasn't the tavern on the corner like in the Old West. It was literally in this arid desert land and is to this day the life source of the community. And it's where the women gathered morning and evening in the cooler parts of the day. And it's not just where they drew water for their households, but it's where they had friendship and fellowship, where they educated one another, where they talked, where they figured out whose arranged marriage was next, where they did all the things, y'all. That was where it happened. It was the place of community and friendship and life. But what we see is this woman, she didn't go there in the cool of the day. This woman didn't go when the community was there. She went quite the opposite at the worst time of the day. Have you ever, raise your hand if you have traveled to the desert or been in a desert or traveled to the Middle East anywhere. I know some of you have. I'm looking at some military folks in this room. The desert in the cool of the day in the summer might be 95 degrees, but in the heat of the day, 110, 115, 120. And that's when she chooses to go to draw heavy buckets of water and haul them back. When she chooses to walk from wherever in the village she lives, she comes about noon because she didn't expect anybody to be there. Nobody's supposed to be at the well in the heat of the day, except there is Jesus, who seemed to have a divine need to be there. I want to pause and tell you that Jesus will go way out of his way to meet you where you are in every one of your moments, no matter how much you're trying to avoid everyone. And he doesn't do that to meet you with shame or condemnation. He does that to meet you with grace and with love. Now, if we keep going on, I want to remind us that at this point, she, nor anybody else for that matter, really knows who Jesus is. Like, he's just coming on the scene. But what she knows is that Jesus is one of those people who consider her people unclean. She knows that Jesus is one of those people who detest her people, who look down on them, who consider them filthy. She knows that she is one of those people in a class system where her people and her being a female makes her the lowest of the low. And she is from a conservative Middle Eastern culture where as a woman you are that much more less than, with no rights. So let me ask you, as she treks out in the heat of the day so for whatever reason she can avoid everyone, what do you think she thinks when she sees this Jewish man at the well? Let me reframe the question. Who do you think she sees when she sees this Jewish man at the well? If you were her, who would you see? Y'all may be too sanctified and too holy. I'd be tempted to see an enemy. I'd be tempted to see someone who I already thinks the worst of me, no matter that nothing has been said or done. The opposite is true. Even by asking her for water, Jesus makes a huge cultural statement. See, by speaking to her, what we can hear is almost a master servant, get me a cup of water, will you get me water? couldn't be farther from that. Because culturally, Jesus wasn't allowed to talk to her. Culturally, he couldn't touch her. Culturally, God forbid he drank from her cup. Her shadow alone made him unclean. But by speaking to her and making this request, Jesus demonstrates some things. He demonstrates, I'm not afraid of you. I'm not afraid of your shadow. I'm not afraid to drink from your cup. I'm not afraid of whatever has isolated you from the rest of your community to bring you out here at the most miserable time of the day. I'm not afraid of your less than female status, and I'm not even afraid of your Samaritan-ness, is what Jesus demonstrates to her. By asking her for a drink, he says, I don't believe you're cursed. You are not unworthy. You are not filthy. You are not unclean. You are not any of those things. You are seen and you have something to offer. Church, notice that Jesus didn't lead with her faults and her flaws. He didn't lead with condemnation of who she was or confrontation about why she wasn't with the rest of the women. He led by seeking her, by seeing her, and by validating her value, church. And if it has been too long since you realized that you matter, let me tell you that Jesus seeks you and Jesus sees you and Jesus values you and you are precious to him. You matter. Your life matters. You are precious. There's a lesson here for us as a church that we don't get complacent in our religion. And that's that Jesus is willing to go in spaces and places with those people to demonstrate their worth to God, and he will challenge us always to do the same. Now, that's the Jesus side of things, but let's not make it all holy. Let's remember that Jesus is of those people to her. So how do you think she's going to respond to his request for water? Tell you what, why don't you read verse 9 with me? Let me get out of the way. The Samaritan woman said to him, you are a Jew and I am a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink? For Jews do not associate with Samaritans. Can you imagine the years of built-up rejection she has on every level? And this guy. I mean, I got to hand it to her. Instead of cowering, instead of shrinking back, she stands up. She doesn't just stand up. She bows up. She's like, who are you, Jew, to ask me, a Samaritan woman, for a drink? How dare you? Can you hear her indignance? You man. You Jew. Nobody else finds this the least bit. Like, nobody else wants to cheer her on. Like, there's a little part of me that wants to cheer her on. Like, you go, girl. Get him. You want to ask me for a drink? But that's a shallow response. Let's pause and look at what her response conveys. What does her response convey to him? Because we can take and look. We've looked at what his request conveyed to her. Her response conveys, I don't see you, I see your kind. It conveys, I don't see your need, I see the audacity of your request. It conveys, I don't see your actions that affirm my worth and my value and my acceptability. I see the past that I've experienced through people like you, and in that I assume that you simply see me as my kind. And you know what they say about assuming. See, church, if we want to keep our hearts open to see Jesus in all the places he wants us to see him, then we got to deal with the fact here that she couldn't see him through her prejudice. She could not see him through her past prejudice. Does that invalidate her prejudice? No. Does it invalidate all the negative things she experienced? Absolutely not. Does it make any of it okay, what happened before? Nope. But God was showing up and she couldn't see it because she was looking through her past. And I got to tell us that God works through people who have prejudice against each other. Nobody wants to look at the political climate today and realize that God might work on both sides of the aisle. That Tia and that Republican senator might have been from different camps, but they got great work done together. Not only does God work through people who have prejudice against each other, but if we're going to capture the best of that, then we can't miss seeing Jesus in others. And not just our own kind of people, whatever definition fits for you. Are we okay? It is quiet in this room. Do I need y'all remind y'all we're having baptism today? Whoop, whoop! How do we think Jesus responds to this? Verses 10 to 12, Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that asked you for a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." "Sir," the woman said, "you have nothing to draw with, and this well is deep. Where can you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself?" See, I'm reading that, even me, I'm reading that with my church voice. I want to capture the attitude here. She says, "Are you, you Jew, are you greater than our father Jacob, the one who gave us this well? Who brought this well, who has given us water through all the centuries? You think you're more special than he is? Is that what you're telling me?" See, she doesn't know yet who she's speaking to. But she knows he's deemed more valuable than her and more important than her and of a much higher class than she is. And she's like, "Look, you can't drink from my cup and you don't have your own. Too bad. By the way, what do you mean you have better water?" If we're keeping it real, what I hear in that is, "You church people, you think you're so special. You think you always have something better than what we have. You church people are always telling us you have something for us, but we have our own things, don't you know?" Can you see the connection? "You Jews, you think you're so superior, but Jacob, one of your own patriarchs, you know we're children of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that Jacob. He's the one who gave us Samaritans this well. He established it. Are you trying to say you have better water than Jacob had?" Now, thank God, because I have had these rants with the Lord myself and my own vocabulary and verbiage. Thank God Jesus responds in his divinity and his godship and not his humanity here. He stays on mission. He stays on assignment. He does not get distracted by her rant. I would imagine he feels great compassion. But he doesn't respond to her attitude. He responds to her need. He tells her, "If you understood who was asking you, you would actually realize that I'm here to give you something that you need." But because of prejudice and because of history and because of her hurt, she couldn't see it. See, she couldn't see Jesus. She couldn't see him through her pride. And I want to remind us that God works through people of all ages and races and classes and statuses and positions. Because God is not a respecter of positions, he's a respecter of people. Church, we got to remember to not miss seeing Jesus in the least of these. Because he says he'll visit us that way. Now, this is where things are about to go really sideways, all right? Like, to now, we're having a conversation about a well and water, and things are about to kind of get really weird and wonky. But let me assure you that in that, the grace continues. I'm actually going to read to you so we can work through what's a pretty long text. John 4, 13 to 25, it's going to be up on the screen. You can follow along or on your own devices or your own hard Bibles in your hands. Jesus answered, "Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks the water I give them will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give them will become in them a spring of water welling up to eternal life." The woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water so that I won't have to thirst and have to keep coming and draw water." And this is where we go sideways. He says, "Go call your husband and come back." And she said, "I have no husband." Jesus said to her, "You are right to say you have no husband. The fact is you have had five husbands, and the man you now have is not your husband. What you have said is quite true." "Sir," the woman said, "I can see that you are a prophet." She just flips it. She's like, "All right, holy man, I can see you're a prophet. Our ancestors worshiped on this mountain, but you Jews claim that the place where we must worship is in Jerusalem." "Woman," Jesus said, "believe me, a time is coming when you will worship the Father neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You Samaritans worship what you do not know, and we worship what we do know, for salvation is from the Jews. Yet a time is coming and has now come when true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth, for they are the kind of worshipers the Father seeks. God is spirit, and his worshipers must worship in the spirit and in truth." The woman said, "I know that Messiah called Christ is coming, and when he comes, he'll explain everything to us." So that's a lot of words, but catch the transaction here. We start out, and she's like, he affirms, "Look, this water doesn't actually quench your thirst," and she says, "Give me the water I need." And he flips the tables and says, "Go get your husband." And she's like, "I don't have a husband." He calls her out on everything she's got going on in her life. He pulls it all out. And she bows up again and is like, "All right, you prophet man." And she goes right back to all the religious division between them. Like, "I'm going to skip what's going on here. And I'm going to go back to what divides us." And Jesus says there's a time when none of that religious stuff matters. And as a matter of fact, we're right here where none of it matters anymore. And she, again, Jesus shows up. She, the Samaritan, is like, "Oh, but the Messiah's coming. And he's going to have all the answers." She, at her core, knows that, believes that. More than half the Jews seem to believe it. And in the whole thing, Jesus moves right past her bravado and stays focused on her. He keeps offering her more. And she's still thinking physical, but Jesus is focused on her greater need. Now he says, "Go get your husband." And again, where it goes sideways. But I want to say, so often when we read this account, we read an account of Jesus coming to rescue some really sinful, awful woman from her depravity. And it's not that she doesn't have sin in her life. It's not that he hasn't come to redeem that. But that's the low-hanging fruit in this story. Church, pay attention, because God's people get this wrong. Jesus doesn't say, "I have living water that'll cleanse you from your sin." He doesn't say, "I have living water to purify your messed up life." He says, "I have a living water that will quench your thirst. I have something to offer you that will meet your need." And I think as adults in the 21st century, we can relate to five divorces is a pretty embarrassing state of place to be. But can I invite us back into the first century? She is not a 21st century woman. She is not a North American woman or a European woman. She is a first century woman trapped in a hopeless patriarchal society that deems her as less than, where women are considered property, where women don't have a right to testify in court, where she has to walk behind her husband in public. Catch this. Women could be divorced in the first century, but women could not divorce. If you miss that, what I mean is women could be fired, but women couldn't do the firing. Women could be divorced by their husbands, yes, for infidelity, but their husbands could also divorce them because of a previously unseen birth defect. Maybe she has a mole that he found afterwards. Divorce her. They could be divorced by their husbands for being barren, never mind that. Y'all do know that most often infertility is a male issue. That's the simpler part, and it's less frequently a female issue, but it's always the woman's fault, right? Oh, it's good. April, have you noticed how quiet it is in the room today? Could also be divorced because she couldn't cook. Like, you burnt the goat, so you're out. You're done. And this woman hasn't just had one divorce. Like, there's hope after one divorce. According to Jewish law and Samaritan law, if your husband only divorced you once, you could still re-enter another marriage with honor and without disgrace. But catch this, in a society where women alone have no value, five times, whether it's because she's been widowed or divorced, five times, her worth and her value have been stripped and ripped away from her. And after the first time, and then the second time, there was no more hope. And then there's a third and a fourth and a fifth time. Forget it. What does that do to your psyche? What does that do to your sense of value and worth? I mean, church, if we're going to keep it real, we got to remember that when we don't get the love and the affirmation, the security and the validation from the people who ought to be providing it in our lives, it leaves gaping, traumatic wounds. Wounds that the enemy preys on, that the enemy feeds on. And see that in those wounds, Jesus didn't offer to cleanse her sins. He offered to quench her thirst. And I want to invite us to look and to hear and to receive that message that your worth and your validation and your value don't come from somewhere else. They come from Jesus. Now, again, she goes straight to the religion at this point. She says, I'm calling you out, prophet man. I'm going to go right back to all the stuff you Jews do wrong, all your religion that always tells us we're wrong. But she says, but I know there's more. There's actually a Savior and a Messiah, and he's coming. He'll shut you up. That's what she says. He's going to come with the answers, and what you're saying won't matter. She's talking to him. Nobody else thinks that's funny. Y'all are serious up in here today. The irony that the very Messiah she held hope for is standing there offering to quench her thirst, but she couldn't see him because of her religion. Oh, let's get that slide up there, Jeremiah, for me, please. You know what? Let's keep it real. She couldn't see him because of her church hurt. How many times do we stay out of places and spaces where Jesus is regularly moving because we have church hurt and we don't want to come back in? Never, huh? I know he's joking. Folks, if we're not careful, we won't see Jesus at work because of our church hurt. But can I tell you that God is alive and well in his church? God is alive at work and at work in his church. Church, do not refuse to see Jesus at work through his own church. Because we were created for community. The longing and the brokenness that she felt at the heat of the day at the well, She wasn't created for that. She was created for community. And no matter what religious hurt or church hurt you have, I am sorry, people are flawed. I am not saying churches aren't broken and messed up. We are not perfect. We do our best. We will never be perfect, but we will continually try to walk how Jesus tells us to walk and love how Jesus tells us to love. And in that accountability and in that relationship, we will all grow and get better together every single time, because when we come together to meet Jesus, he quenches our thirst. And thank God in this moment, Jesus doesn't leave her in her blindness. Actually, I want you to read with me these next three verses, verses 26 to 29. Now remember, he's tried to offer her hope, and she has said, not from you Jews, you're bossy, but there's a Messiah coming, and he'll tell us, right? Let's see what Jesus says. Big voices. Then Jesus declared, I, the one speaking to you, I am he. Just then his disciples returned and were surprised to find him talking with a woman. But no one asked, what did you want, or why are you talking with her? Then, leaving her water jar, the woman went back to the town and said to the people, come see a man who has told me everything I ever did. Could this be the Messiah? I'm going to pause this right here, because he has this whole interaction with his disciples. This text is so rich, we could do a whole sermon series, but today we're focused on seeing Jesus, so we're going to skip that part and fast forward a few verses back to her. Let's pick it back up. Many of the Samaritans from that town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. He told me everything I ever did. So when the Samaritans came to him, they urged him to stay with them. And he stayed 2 days, and because of his words, many more became believers. He says, it's me. And she finally gets it. Her blind eyes that had been blinded by prejudice and by pride and by church hurt, they are opened, and she gets it. And in getting it, she realizes what he's actually offering her. But catch this. She saw Jesus because he saw her first. Jesus has a physical body. It's a glorified body, but it's up in heaven. The Holy Spirit is here on earth with us, but he tells us we're his hands and feet. I'm going to wrangle our pride a little bit. Y'all know we're not the only ones that are his hands and feet, right? You know that Jesus is working through the hands and feet of those people from that country. Those recovering addicts, those prisoners. He's working through those criminals or those immigrants, or those fill in the blank. And all the prejudices and all the division that the world stirs in us, it not only breaks God's heart, but he challenges us as believers by continually working through the people on the other side. She saw Jesus because Jesus saw her first. And I want to ask us, can you see God through others? And even more, because she got excited. She said, forget that he told her all the bad stuff that she did. Forget that he put it all out there. See, he wasn't shaming her. He was offering her healing. And she said, come see the one who told me everything I ever did. She's talking to the townspeople who won't go to the well with her. The women who would scorn her at the well, she is knocking on their door saying, come on. I know you know what a mess I am, but you got to meet this stranger who just told me what a mess. He told me everything. He knows everything. He's offering healing. You got to come get some healing. You got to come get some healing. You got to come get some healing. Pastor Rick said that needs to be a slide. Jeremiah, you on it? Good thing we have a savvy tech teenager in the booth. Last question. Will you invite others to see Jesus through you? Because I'm one of those people to some people. And you're one of those people to some people. That Republican senator may have been one of those people to a community health care worker. And a community health care worker might have been one of those people to that Republican senator. And all that blindness will continue to leave mankind going to the well at the heat of the day, trying to do life alone. And Jesus is saying, see me at work. Open your eyes and don't be blind to the love that I have to teach you through others and to show others through you. Are we okay, church?